Hey, everybody. Really good show. We discussed the upcoming alleged Ethereum merge and what the implications are for Ethereum and, you know, for the crypto markets and also for the NFT markets. I'll give you a hint. There are a lot of unknowns, but Node explains, you know, he's much more knowledgeable when it comes to Ethereum than I am. Node explains what's coming. He references DC Investor, who came on our Twitter show earlier this week, and some of his theories about which direction we're going in with the Ethereum merge. I provide counterpoints. I bring up a lot of stuff concerning Bitcoin. What a surprise. And overall, I think it's a good conversation. Obviously, there's a lot of NFT discussion also. As usual, all of our content is sponsored by FTX. You can sign up at thenifty.com/FTX or with the code thenifty on your FTX mobile app. In this video, we are discussing the upcoming Ethereum merge and whether it is bullish for NFTs. As usual, nothing in this video is financial advice. We are not financial advisors. The NFT space is incredibly risky. So always do your own research. And as always, if you enjoy the content, make sure that you hit the like button, smash the subscribe button. It really helps us out. A shout out to our sponsor, FTX. You can sign up at thenifty.com/FTX or with the code thenifty on your FTX mobile app. I'm here with Micah G and Depeche Node, and we are going to dive deep into the Ethereum merge and again whether it is bullish for NFTs. So this week on the morning show, we had DC Investor, who Node is a massive fan of. I definitely am a huge fan of after that conversation. And he's a big Ethereum guy. He's a crypto OG. He's been in the crypto space for a while now. I believe he said he first bought Bitcoin in 2013. He bought the top at $1,000 and sold for a loss at like $400 or $500. So he knows pain from crypto, that's for sure. But at this point, it seems like his focus is mostly on Ethereum. That is something that he is very giga bullish on, I guess you could say. And he was talking about the Ethereum merge, and he has a lot of strong opinions about the Ethereum merge that I think a lot of Bitcoiners would probably disagree with. But I wanted to, you know, maybe note, since you follow this much closer than I do, you follow DC Investor closer than I do, I was wondering if you could maybe, you know, give us an idea of, you know, what your opinion is. Maybe you can give us his perspective on the Ethereum merge, what it's ultimately going to be, what it's going to mean. And for the layman that may not be totally deep in this, essentially what the merge is going to do is it's going to convert Ethereum's structure to from a proof of work architecture, which it is right now, which is the same thing as Bitcoin, to a proof of stake architecture. And it's unclear whether proof of stake actually is going to be a thing. I want to remind everybody that, okay? It's unclear. But Node, you can go ahead and take it away.
Sure. Yeah, thanks BTC Maxi over there. So in terms of, like, I mean, there's other networks, right, that are already employing proof of stake. So it's operational on other chains. But this is like the biggest event in, like, I would say in crypto history, aside from the launch of like Bitcoin and ETH and Ethereum, is going to be the merge, because no other platform and no other network or blockchain that's become this big has undergone a change this massive. So it is a huge change. And it's basically changing, like you mentioned, the security, the architecture behind how the network is secured and how that operates and how it's validated. So I'm giga bullish. Most people, I'm like very close to ETH Maxi, right? So this is my bias for sure. But what's interesting from, like, the reason why it's such a big deal is it's incredibly efficient compared to proof of work from an energy perspective, and in that regard, it also requires less issuance, right? So when your blockchain now, it requires 99.95% less energy to operate, you no longer have to issue so much new supply every year as your security, right? So, and this is one thing that DC kind of hinted at, right? Or he laid it out somewhat clearly on the show of Bitcoin's like upcoming, the security, potential security issue as issuance gets less and less. You've got less, you know, that's less Bitcoin that can be provided to the miners, right? So the price of Bitcoin has to go up in order for that, in order for miners' incentives to continue. And so with Ethereum moving to proof of stake, they no longer have to supply as much new ETH every year. So issuance of new ETH is going to go from, I think it's 4.3% down to 0.4% every year. So that is a 90% reduction in the new supply of Ether, which is bullish from a price perspective, right? It's just that's less supply coming on the market. And then, you know, coupled with that, you have the energy efficiency standpoint, which in my view is giga bullish from a narrative perspective on NFTs, right? That's one of the main reasons why people hate NFTs is this whole, you know, environmental issue. So when you've got a blockchain that's now the most financially, like the most, probably the green financial system out there, that's a legitimate like system, in my eyes, that's pretty bullish. So the biggest concern is how and when this goes down and how smooth the transition actually is.
Yeah, Node, on that point, are you saying just like on this giga bullish when there's energy, you know, oh, it's way less energy. Are you saying that you think that like larger brands have been sitting off to the side or unwilling to basically build on Ethereum while there's the environmental consideration and then potentially come in the second that that's no longer the case? Like, is that what we're anticipating that the energy reduction does?
Right. I mean, aside from like it actually being more environmentally friendly, right? Like that's just a net good, I think, as long as you can assume that the network and look, proponents of this, they will say, of course, that this security model is as good as proof of work, if not superior in certain ways. Like there's trade-offs. But the overall narrative is like, well, yeah, it can't hurt. Right. It's like, okay, we're now using a crap ton less energy. And so if that's why a lot of these brands have been holding back, then great. Right. Like that's a huge incentive, for them to be able to push forward and not have to worry about any kind of blowback from environmental concerns.
Now to discuss the bearish case of that though, do we think that the fact that we've seen the price come down from $4,000 down to 800, you know, like it's just tanked. Do you think there's enough people, because I've seen this with a lot of NFT projects, is they held on for a endpoint. They said, this is the time that I'm holding this asset. I just got to make it to the merge. I just got to hold to this next roadmap item. Is there any concern that there's just so many people saying, oh, the merge is going to cause the price to go up, that they've held on this long and their willingness to hold on is not going to survive much past the merge? Like, is there a consideration that everyone now is like, I just got to make it to the merge, then the price is going to go way up. And then if it doesn't immediately go way up, we see a whole bunch of selling pressure. Like, that's what I'm worried about on the bearish side is this just the roadmap item that everyone was waiting to dump on? And there's just everyone is waiting to dump the second that happens.
Yeah, I think it's a very valid concern, right? So the issue is the merge, it doesn't, you know, I mentioned it changes the supply, which is a big deal. But it's like from one day to the next, it's not like structurally everything in the world has changed, right? This is going to take, it's like the Bitcoin halving cycles where it takes, you know, time, months, even years for like the full effects to be played out because it's daily new supply is less. But on a daily basis, like one day to the next, not a huge deal. Now, over the course of a year or two, that's like billions of dollars of less sell pressure, which is meaningful. But if people are expecting some huge change overnight, like the narrative can get overhyped in a huge way. And then it could dump all just based on that, right? Like based on them expecting something dramatic to change. And yes, the entire security of the network has changed, but it's not that the structural demand, like, on day one, you have $4 billion of less selling pressure, right? So that's like a valid concern. The other one is that the merge may not go as smoothly as we hope that it will, right? Like nothing ever goes perfectly. Like when, and you're an engineer, right, Micah? Like how often does a software, like, is the updated push perfect? You know,
well, it's never perfect, because software engineers have to bill you for a bunch of hours, you know, so that's important. So it's never going to be perfect at first. We'll see how the software engineers handle this one. Right, Micah?
Yeah. I mean, bug fixes are built in. How do I get job security if there's not a few bug fixes that I can fix later? So, yeah. I mean, it's gotta be scary to do this on chain in front of everyone, in front of a ton of people that have a lot of investment into how this like one single deploy goes. It sounds like that we still have, there's like one more, like Gorli, I think goes live. And that is like the closest you can get to actual Ethereum. So it sounds really well, like as in they have a lot of these testnets that have a lot of the same transaction volume. So yeah, I think the market's not pricing in bugs at all, and any bug is going to cause chaos. So I don't know. I'd be looking to buy a dip necessarily, but I think I'm on your side of like, I'm kind of cautious that this does not do great things for the price. Like, I think there's more that don't understand what it's going to do that are just thinking it's going to shoot the price up automatically. So I'm looking to buy dips actually. So.
Yeah, I mean, so I'm really opinionated about all this. I love Node being all excited about Ethereum and, you know, just trying to like just being so happy about this merge that guess what? It could be a complete disaster. All the ETH maxis right now are gonna like, all right, here, how about this? It's DC Investor said something that I 1000% agree with, which is this is the biggest thing in the history of crypto since Ethereum hitting the market. And then before that, since Bitcoin's inception. It literally is. Because what do you have? You have an actual robust second biggest blockchain, right? That's used widely, that's properly decentralized. This isn't some venture backed, you know, Solana and like, dude, I mean, come on. Solana is becoming a big part of our business. It's Easy's whole world, right? To me, Solana is like Dave and Buster's. You know what I mean? It's literally like you're going to, like, it's like Chuck E. Cheese. And I'm not trying to be disrespectful.
But I'm tweeting that out. Let's do that. Solana is Chuck E. Cheese. Easy, let's go.
It's Chuck E. Cheese with gambling, with a lot of gambling.
That's why I'm saying it's Dave and Buster's. It's like an amusement park. It's like Six Flags. And you have these tickets and these tokens and you trade these things and it's a lot of fun and it's so cool. And Sam Bankman-Fried owns it or something. Like, it's really a cool thing. And it has its place. It's not going to be the global reserve currency. Whales are not going to like put, like, institutions are not going to put billions and maybe in some instances trillions of dollars and treat it as a safe haven asset. That's not what it is, right? But there really is like a case to be made that Ethereum could be like the biggest thing since the internet. That's what Ethereum maxis believe. Am I wrong about that?
Yeah, the decentralized computer, right? Like the network that the world is run on, for sure.
So the Bitcoin people, me, believe that Bitcoin's the biggest thing ever. The Ethereum people believe that Ethereum is the biggest thing ever. I don't think anybody's really trying to make the case that like Solana or AVAX are the biggest thing ever, even the people on those chains. That doesn't mean that, that doesn't mean that those things aren't going to like dominate. There could be a situation where over the next 3 years, all of NFTs moves to Solana and Solana's like the NFT chain and that's it. You know what I mean? Like, that's possible. I'm not saying that's going to happen, but all these things are possible. So it's a really, if the merge goes well, it's a really big deal. I need to talk about this proof of work, proof of stake energy narrative. Okay. So first of all, we're going to eventually at some point, I'm sure, get Nick Carter on the show. And that is my version. Like, dude, your DC investor.
He's your DC. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, I got like five of these guys on the Bitcoin side that are like my DC. But Nick Carter is way at the top of that list for sure, like a top three guy. And he just knows everything about the energy thing. Here's the fundamental thing about proof of work architecture, specifically with Bitcoin, is that it provides a financial incentive to the person that has the most energy to offer to the network, okay? And when you don't understand that, when you don't look into the future, what do you think about that? You think it uses a lot of energy. That's bad. We want to use less energy. We don't want to use more. What it actually does is it incentivizes whoever is providing that energy to trend toward and eventually get to 100% renewable energy. So you're providing financial incentive to get to 100% renewable energy. And guess what? Ask Elon Musk, ask so Bill Gates is not a Bitcoin, he's not a crypto bull because it's against his financial incentives, but he actually has a lot of content where he talks about energy. And one thing that Bill Gates talks about when it comes to energy a lot is that it's insanely difficult to store. And it still is. It's just so hard to store. And number two, a lot of it gets wasted. Like this ridiculous percentage of energy in the world ends up getting wasted. So you basically start wasting zero energy once you plug Bitcoin's proof of work architecture in it. And exhibit A would be, and I bring this up and people like make fun of me about it, the geothermal energy produced by volcanoes in El Salvador.
Volcanoes, here it comes. We knew volcanoes were about to enter this conversation.
Everyone, check your bingo cards. Check your bingo cards. We have volcanoes.
So my closing thing is, that's the world I want to be in. 100% renewable energy that's not wasted because of financial incentives, where Bitcoin is deeply built into the energy, like the energy situation. It's just part of it. You have a Tesla battery in your house that's charged with the solar panels that are on your roof, and you use that Tesla battery to run your to power your house. You use it to charge your car, and the leftover energy mines Bitcoin automatically built into the battery, so you're making passive income. All right, back to you guys.
Okay, I like it. I like it. Great. Renewal is great, but it's like if you don't need the battery and the solar panels in the first place, that's still a better use, right? It's like you don't have to build stuff for it, dog. So, and here's what I'll say in defense of the old, hey, this is not going to go well. And look, I have no idea. I'm not a software engineer. But if we look back, Bitcoiners were talking about EIP 1559, like they're like this, they're going to screw it up. They implemented that, and it like the next day it was operational, and there was literally no issues with it. I felt like basically, it went off without a hitch. This entire year has been testnet stuff. So they've been deploying things on testnet, doing tests, like all tests, like this whole year. I don't think they've introduced necessarily anything new for a long time. They've just been testing. And so this is the final test. So as long as this final test goes well, I mean, I feel okay about it, other than, yeah, there may be some hiccups when it's actually going live. But I feel like whatever happens, it's going to be fixable. You know, fingers crossed. But again, that is something very much to consider. I will mention one other thing that has to do, you know, in terms of if you want to time, you know, like the market and what happens. So the Beacon chain has been up for over a year, right? And this is the chain that is proof of stake, where people can stake their ETH and all they do is stake it, right?
And real quick, are you talking about the Beacon chain?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, like how I said the Beacon chain right at the beginning.
Is this the future financial system is just on Beacon? Is that what we're saying here?
They call it the Beacon chain, right? And so that's that, if you have already staked ETH, that's where it is, right? And that is the staked ETH, right, with the validators that is going to secure the network when the merge happens. So that's what the merge is. We have the main chain and the Beacon chain merging together. And so when that happens, in about 6 to 12 months after the merge, that ETH can be unlocked if you want to unstake it, right? So in 6 to 12 months, and it can't all be unlocked at once. There's like some weird formula that I'll never figure out exactly what it is. But in 6 to 12 months, the unlocks will be able to start happening. So that may be a period of time when you want to pay attention to the market, when this ETH is coming. If people decide to not stake on the network anymore, they have the option to unstake it, right? But the beautiful part about this system is that if there's more people, if there's less stakers, right, like the yield goes up. If there's more, the yield goes down. So it's going to kind of have this interesting equilibrium. But, you know, I think it's interesting just all the dynamics. The most interesting dynamic of all is just what this does to supply and demand issues. It's going to change everything over the next year, I would say.
Okay, it's a big deal. Go ahead, Micah.
Between you two, we have like our ETH Maxi, our Bitcoin Maxi. I'm just here. I just need some sort of fund to trade internet cartoon pictures. Yeah,
you're funny, man.
So let's talk about the middle part, which is the internet cartoon pictures.
Yeah, that's the title. Instead, me and Noah just got into a fucking argument.
I just saw, you know, I had to get my merge out. You know, yeah,
these two just fighting over here. Let's get into like, what does this do for our internet cartoon pictures?
Absolutely.
And I will start by saying I'm a little nervous because I feel like we've now proven out that when the price goes way up in the immediate future, it does not bode well for internet pictures, right? Like people don't necessarily want NFTs when Ethereum is skyrocketing. And then they also don't want NFTs when Ethereum is going way down. When NFTs are doing well is when it's like a relatively stable price. So I am concerned about around this merge that people are going to get out of everything that is not incredibly high quality. Like, aren't we already seeing that a little bit? Is like the flight to quality
a little
like,
bit?
Yeah. I'm trading coins. I'm horrible at trading coins, and I'm kind of like a little scared to get into stuff right now because if we see these massive changes or it goes super well, I don't want to be in an NFT at that moment. I want to be in Ethereum. If it goes super poorly, I also don't want to be in NFTs because they're going to be relatively illiquid. So so I don't know what you guys.
Well, on that, I mean, the difference between so there's a ton of risk, right, when you're in Ethereum, right, because we don't know what Ethereum is ultimately going to be. You know, I find my thing with Ethereum is I find it hard to believe that it would ever be money. Having said that, that doesn't mean its market cap couldn't theoretically be bigger than Bitcoin's, right? That's the conundrum is, do you believe that Ethereum won't be money? And won't have a bigger and will have a bigger market cap than Bitcoin? Or do you think Ethereum won't be money and as a result, value accrues to the top and everything ends up getting built on Bitcoin, like layer two, layer three, layer four, layer five? Are the people building Ethereum right now just showing future Bitcoin developers how to approach things, right? And tune in for the comments being like, yo, Bitcoin Maxi Hopium on that one. That's crazy, blah, blah, blah. But anyway, on the NFT side, you have to recognize the orders of magnitude of risk in buying any single NFT compared to just holding Ethereum. Like holding Ethereum is like a walk in the park compared to buying any NFT project. Even CryptoPunks. CryptoPunks were down at 50 grand like in June, like 7 weeks ago or something. And now what are they, 125 grand floor?
Yeah.
You serious? Like imagine holding it from 125 grand down to 50, back to 125 in like an 11 week period.
I did. Yeah, I don't have to imagine it. I did it. Yeah.
And if you're not a holder, like a lot of you guys like holders, I know Node has like amazing quality stuff. If you're not a holder, that volatility can play in really good ways. Like if you, before Other Side came out, sold your mutant at 40 Ethereum, got it into cash because Ethereum was 3,000. You could have bought a Bored Ape 3 weeks later. So just understanding that like when those things switch, like not getting too stuck in any one camp can be valuable. Like if you ride Ethereum up right now, I think that then when everyone's rich from Ethereum going way up, right? The bull case on the merge, Ethereum just goes way up. Everyone's super excited. I think right after that happens, if it stabilizes somewhere, then everybody rushes into NFTs. Hey, we're all rich. What do we go buy with this? Oh, let's buy really nice art. Let's buy cool, you know, on-chain stuff. Because I think that's what happens, right? Is when Ethereum is way up, it's not like people pay the same price for NFTs. They're all feeling wealthy and they all deliver it out to NFT projects. So I think there's plays there, like swing plays, but I'm just scared about them right now because step one is probably ride the Ethereum up if you're bullish about it before you buy NFTs.
It's such a hard game. It is just such a hard game. Honestly, the only thing that I think is like a really legitimate top signal is when you're in real life friends, like your normie friends, so to speak, start texting you. And the last time that happened was Other Deed. And what was Other Deed? Literally the Pico top. You know, I got airdropped a mutant code. It was worth $100,000 right then and there. And I believe mutants, you know, they quickly went from like 40 to 20 with ETH at $3,000, but you could have locked down a mutant sale at 32, right? And that's like another 100K. So right there that night, two NFTs, 200 grand cash, boom, done. Then Ethereum goes down to sub $1,000. That's 200 Ethereum if you want to play it perfect. And what Mike is talking about, the trading thing, DC alluded to this. And I listened to other podcasts with DC, like he was on Bankless, exceptional podcast. I'm assuming you've definitely listened to that one, right? No, the
that's,
DC.
That's how I entered the space, was through them. Yeah. A year and a half ago, almost 2 years ago now, I started listening to them. Yeah.
Exceptional podcast. And DC talks about how buying something and having it go up by 2x, 100% in 3 days doesn't really excite him, or in 3 weeks, it doesn't, and then selling it, it doesn't really excite him. That's not really what he's going for. He's looking to buy like the special stuff and having it 10 or 100x over 10 years, right? Which is the same thing that we've been referencing. We've been talking about this documentary, The Price of Everything, quite a bit. It's really, in my opinion, the best NFT documentary. Well, it's not an NFT documentary, but the best documentary to understand some of this NFT stuff that I've ever seen, and I'm telling everybody about it. But it just sticks out to me that during the bear market, the collector that's featured in the documentary bought a Jeff Koons, the Jeff Koons rabbit, for $950K. And at that time, everybody told him he was crazy, and now it's worth $55 million. And it took like, you know, 15 years or something for it to get to that $55 million price point, even actually maybe even more, like 25 years or something like that. And everyone in the NFT space, except for like the DC investors and the real badasses that you don't see in the comments on YouTube and aren't hanging out in Discords, and you know, maybe they have Twitter accounts, maybe they don't, they're really trying to get their rocks off. But one thing DC did say is that when you're in NFTs and the crypto cycle too, like he was like, sometimes it is appropriate to sell. I'm messing up his words a little bit, but basically what he was saying is like, there have been times to sell, right? And for example, that Pico top night with Other Deed, when you get airdropped $100,000 for free and it goes from 100 down to 15K, right? And then I end up selling at 32 after the fact. And look, it was still 32,000 free dollars. That's awesome. Like, you know, what is your life when that's happening? It's still crazy that swing from 100 to 15 to 32. I'm pretty sure you should have taken the 100, right? So that's something to think about in this trader's market.
And you can sense it. If you've been around long enough, I mean, you remember the day of Other Deeds, I was telling you guys to sell your Other Deeds, and it's not like a hit on the project. Like, I think there's a lot of people that try to like gatekeep the projects, and they're like, oh, you're selling, you must hate what they're trying to do. It's like, you have to look around and say, are the people I'm surrounded with equally as hyped as me? Like, are they gonna stay through the actual delivery, or are they just here because this thing is at the top of everyone's mind, and before they deliver on their roadmap item, they're all gonna leave? And that to me was ultimately Other Deeds. It's like, I'm really excited about this. I'm now bullish on it. I bought back in around like two to three Ethereum a piece. I'm bullish on, I love it. I hope it succeeds. But that doesn't mean that as a trader I can't go, hey, these things are $25,000 a piece and nobody's delivered anything and it's day one, maybe now is not the time to hold it. So I think that's a skill that, like, people just being like, oh, I'm a diamond hand, I believe in the project, that doesn't mean you can't sell in and out if you know that the roadmap is so far away that other people are going to lose interest.
And you know that there's euphoria in the market and your normie friends are texting you asking you about Other Deed. Like, literally, you know what I mean? So what do we if this merge thing legit happens in 8 weeks or less, what? Like, what is going to happen? It's crazy, right? I mean, no, you were talking about like an airdrop too, right?
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, so I think I'll answer the question first, then I'll talk about this potential fork, which is like I totally agree with Micah, right? Like, the merge to me means volatility. Like, it's going to equal volatility. And NFTs don't really like it when ETH is volatile, right? Yeah. Like, we don't know where to go, or it just, the market can get a little bit crazy. So I actually think it'll be bullish short term if you like volatility and you want to scoop up something that goes crazy, that has a big dip, right? Like, maybe NFTs have a hard dip because ETH rips one way or the other. That could be an opportunity to buy. And then longer term, like when things settle out, I think that's when NFTs have the potential to increase. So I totally agree with Micah's sentiment. It's probably wise to be very cautious over the next 6 months
while people figure out what's going on with ETH and depending on what happens with the merge. The other potential thing that could happen, right, is that some miners might say, hey, we want to keep our own chain. We want to keep ETH POW, you know, the proof of work fork, and we want to make that its own chain, and just fork it. And that if they do that, then everybody would automatically get, you know, like you'd get the whatever ETH you have, you would get the ETH PAL version on their chain, which could end up being something like Ethereum Classic or something, right? Where hey, people value it for some stupid reason. But the challenge is after I read a few threads on Twitter that I would just cautious everyone, like, just wait for a little bit, because what might happen is you get like everybody trying to go and like trade their ETH PAL for something else. And there's like, you know, you'll have sketchy exchanges, and you'll have, you know, the liquidity might dry. You might not have any liquidity, so you're paying more in gas than the tokens are even worth anything. So there, again, there may be something which could be interesting. If they do a fork, just, you know, hold on for a little bit. And if it turns out to actually some people value it, then I would just dump it all over them, you know, like 100%. I mean,
me too. Well, like,
yeah,
come on.
Just dump it.
Would that be a snapshot? Like, I think I'm too much of a newbie on coins, but like, is there like a block that like at this block, we're taking everyone's, you know, balance, and that's what they get on our, and would that pre-announced? Would it be pre-announced, or do they post-announce it? Like basically, could I load up and then offload it before, you know, like before merge stuff happens?
I have no idea. I imagine it's like at the time of the fork, right? Whenever that, you know, like whenever the merge actually happens, or whenever they decide to fork it, I imagine that's when it happens. I was around when BCH forked off, and all I know is I just had a Coinbase account at the time. And BCH showed up in my account, and that was it, right? Like, and it must have been associated with the amount of BTC that I had. So you don't need to like do anything, but it's probably, I would guess that it's around whenever the fork actually happens. But it, I mean, yeah, who knows, man? I think it's, most people are just kind of like, it's ridiculous. There's really like almost, to me, it feels like, less of a purpose than Ethereum Classic, right? So it's like you're now have the ETH POW chain that was not the original chain, but it's just the middle chain that has no purpose now. So I would just dump the whole thing. That's what I would do.
I mean, that's what I'm gonna do too. I mean,
yeah. If we get it, if the miners actually decide they're gonna try and build this thing, you know, like and that's a big if. So
that's a big if, and it's like I want that just less than anything, right? So, okay. So look, we talked about the hypotheticals on the fork. We talked about what we think will happen. This is unknown in so many ways, and in terms of price, it's incredibly hard to predict. Any closing thoughts on the Ethereum merge about what might happen with NFTs? Node?
I do have one final thought that is a misconception with the merge, is that it's not going to reduce your gas fees. So a lot of people think that's actually like the purpose of it.
Not right away.
Not at all. I mean, so the merge, like when it transitions, they say like, okay, the block time will be, it'll be like 10% faster, okay, which technically would mean like if the throughput is 10% quicker, your gas fees are going to reduce by around the same amount, I guess. Right. Like however capacity works, but it's basically a trivial amount. It's not going to impact your gas prices. What will impact your gas prices is things moving to layer two. And that's like the end goal for Ethereum, is like execute on layer two. And then eventually further down the road, we have sharding, which is a whole nother ball of wax, which will, I think, reduce gas fees, but that's a ways out, you know? So it's like, yeah, people are mistaking that like the whole like ETH's roadmap has a bunch of things on it, and they're thinking it's all coming at the merge when it's absolutely not. So that's just my final thought on the merge in general.
Okay, and Micah, any closing thoughts?
Well, my closing thought is that I know that I'm not a whale in the space, and so I'm very careful about not trying to get involved with stuff that whales or very large accounts are going to be playing around with. So I'm trying to stay out of the Ethereum merge, and I'm playing around in areas that I know. So I'm actually getting involved in ApeCoin right now because they don't have to deliver anything. So I'm taking Ethereum, I'm swapping it to ApeCoin because they don't have to deliver anything in the immediate future. to hold up on the hype or the value. They had a great demo. And on top of that, they have a staking event. So since I have a mutant, I'm able to stake on it. So I'm literally just trying to stay in areas that are, at least in the volatility, going to have some fun that I'm comfortable with, but actually trying to trade off of and expecting the price to go up or down. I'm just holding on to Marin. That's the only person that tells me what the price is going to do. So I'm scared. I'm scared about this. I know that I don't know what I'm talking about with these coin ones. So for me, and I think there's a lot of people potentially like me that are, right, you're swimming in waters with much bigger people than you, much bigger fish. I'm just trying to stay on the fringes there and survive it, because I think there's going to be a lot of excitement, potentially a lot of dips down that I can play with after it happens, but I'm not going to be heavy in Ethereum when the merge happens.
Okay. Wow. ApeCoin over Ethereum. Wow. ApeCoin, they said that long term they're going to go on their own chain. That's what they said before. That ain't going to happen, is it? They're not that big.
Didn't the community, they voted that down, right? Like, and saying, should we move off of ETH? And everyone in the community voted no. So I don't know what they're going to do next. Maybe they, I mean, an L2 makes sense to me if they wanted to do that. It's like, hey, move over to L2, figure that out. You know, that's where the games should be played. So.
Damn, also, not financial advice. Let me just specify, not financial advice.
Everyone in the chat's like, wow, ApeCoin, like, let's go. Let's all ape in.
No, everyone's literally saying, no, don't do it. But ApeCoin, I have ApeCoin, $7.30. I didn't know it was going up like that. What's your target, Micah?
I would probably sell it at like 15 potentially, but
that's a lot.
Hey, yeah, that'd be great. I'd take the double, but I also have the chance to stake it. So ape staking is supposed to come out. You can stake a certain amount based on the asset you have, which is cool because people that have just bought a lot of ApeCoin but don't have one of the assets, so a dog, a mutant, an ape, they can't stake on any of these pools. You have to have one of the assets, and then you have a certain amount of ApeCoin you can stake. So for me, with a mutant, I can have 2,000 ApeCoin staked to get ape. And it's like it returns in 9 months. Like, you get back the same amount. So the amount that you actually get from staking is relatively valuable. So the one danger is Animoca has an unlock, like a massive ApeCoin unlock relatively coming up. So that's the worry, is that big players are just going to dump on us. But you know what? I'm more comfortable doing it than Ethereum right now, just because I at least feel like there's some control. Like, I know that ecosystem. I know when things are going to happen. And again, it's a dangerous trade. This is not financial advice.
The staking is they're just rewarding you in more ape, right? Okay, so yep. for those that like have not participated in coins like this, just recognize, right, that if Micah G, if he's doubling the amount of his ape in 9 months, that means your ape that you got is going to be worth less. You know what I mean? Because you now only have half. So if you have ApeCoin and you're not staking, like, that is the worst thing that you can do, because you are getting diluted. Like, 100% you're getting diluted, right? So just be careful with that as well, right? Like, so that means the supply is being increased quickly over a short period of time, which means you are getting diluted if you are not staking the coin.
I mean, fantastic to bring that up, Mr. DeFi node. I love it when you get spicy about DeFi. I just wanted to show you guys this, see like
what, oh, you gosh, think of, here we go. Here
see
we
what
go.
You think about this real quick.
Wait,
so what's he saying here? What's he saying?
And
but you didn't short it, did you?
So I did get the Ethereum Foundation to sell about 70,000 ETH, like, basically at the top, and that's doubled our runway now. So, very right, fairly quickly. And
pretty good, huh? 70,000 Ethereum right at the
good
top.
Good on him.
Huh?
He's like, talked the Ethereum Foundation's like sitting there. They hold a bunch of ETH, obviously. He's like, dude, guys, right now is a good time to sell it. Like, let's keep funding the foundation. I got no issues with that, man. No issues whatsoever.
He needed to pull the Elon Musk where you pretend you're going to buy a company so that no one freaks out when you sell all of your assets, and then be like, never mind, I don't want that company. Elon Musk knew Tesla was going down in price, and he was just like, I got to make up an excuse to sell where people won't freak out.
And
so
hey, remember, Vitalik, too, even like back in, was it 2017 or whatever, that he said, like, hey, like the price is amazing, but have we earned it kind of a thing. So he's like, he gets it, you know, like in the last cycle, he was like, look, everything's, we haven't earned this price. And at that point in time, he was like, hey, if ETH Foundation, go ahead and sell now, you'll get more runway. And then, you know, let's go ahead and maybe they'll buy back in, maybe not, because they've got a business, they've got a foundation to run, got developers to pay, you know. I got no issues with Vitalik selling ETH, man.
I mean, you know, none of us on this stream bought Ethereum at 4,500. If I was somebody that had bought it that and knew that I had just bought the founder's Ethereum, I'd be pretty pissed right now.
And I guess it was the, I don't think it was his, right? It was the Ethereum Foundation's Ethereum. So he, I don't think
you didn't short it, did you?
So I did get the Ethereum Foundation to sell about 70,000 ETH, like basically at the top, and that's doubled our run.
Yeah, I mean, look, I'm like half joking. I get it, but this is why it's not money. It's like a startup type of thing. You know, it just
Dude, I bought so many things with ETH. And what have you bought with Bitcoin, man? I buy NFTs. Like you bought two NFTs today with ETH. It's so weird. I'm spending ETH all the time. It's like so weird. He says it isn't money. This is just so bizarre. I'm like, I just spent it yesterday on an NFT, dude.
Tokens of Chuck E. Cheese aren't money either. All right, ladies and gentlemen, we hope you enjoyed the show. You learned a lot today, clearly, ladies and gentlemen. No, always love having these chats. Node knows this stuff. Mike is a badass. Thanks for watching. Sign up with FTX with our code, thenifty.com/FTX, or with the code thenifty on your FTX mobile app. And thanks so much for watching. We will catch you guys next time. See ya.